Yes, sir. Dieter and Hutch alive and commercial free here on a Thursday, week four of the NFL season. We're talking 49ers and Jaguars. And Jake, you were telling me just before we came on, this is the first game that you don't have a great feel on. And I'm with you. This is a tricky, tricky little game.
Listen. Yeah, I trash the Jaguars because Brian Thomas Jr.'s alligator arm in it, and you know, Travis Hunter didn't know the plays, but the Jaguars aren't like really getting involved well. And then sometimes you're like, just, you know, does Trevor Lawrence know what he's looking for at all? And then sometimes you're like, ooh, that was nice from Trevor Lawrence. And then, you know, it's real hit or miss with him.
My biggest takeaway on the Jags is that they feel like they're on the precipice, and that is not to say that they get over the hump at all. It is merely to say that they are, imminence implies an end result of success. They're right there. They could be a pretty damn good football team in a, well, I guess now it's a good division. I don't know. Your Colts are just killing it, but
apparently,
You knew all along. And Daniel Jones, best quarterback in the NFL. I saw this coming. He's the next Josh Allen.
I predicted it.
You just don't know if that's going to show up this week or not. And I do think, and let's start with the Niners defense against the Jags offense here.
Yeah.
It does feel like there, when you watch the Jags offense and how great Liam Cohen schemes this thing up and how well their offensive line is blocking in the run game and the kind of concepts they like to use in an 11 personnel pass game, it feels like that's not great for the San Francisco 49ers this week.
Yeah, I think what's interesting is, so the Jags like run game, it's not like they're getting huge chunk plays, but they're like pretty, they had a tough time against the Texans, but the Texans are like still very good on defense. It's the only thing like theoretically holding that team together.
Not only are they still good on defense, I don't think there's a team that ends plays in a more dramatic, flashy fashion. Every time they got a tackle, it was like, Jesus Christ. Aziz Al-Shaair is out here just sacrificing it all. I love
some violence, but the Jags have the eighth, or they have the lowest stuff rate on offense. So like the rushes get stuffed 8.4% of the time, which is the lowest in the league, and they're running between the tackles like 53% of the time. So they're like not getting stuffed running up the middle, but you also see them sort of struggle to like open it up to bigger chunk plays, whereas that's all the 49ers are hunting. And the 49ers, if you're curious, have a 23.2% stuff rate on their runs, which is third highest in the league.
That's called the Michael Williams stat. That's what that
is. No. It's their offense.
Oh,
their runs get stuffed 23% of the time. That's three times higher than the Jags.
Having watched this team for 3 weeks, we can attest. I think everyone can attest that, in fact, they are getting stuffed quite a lot. I'm actually, the biggest thing that I noticed from last year to this year, and I won't pretend as if I was some sort of Jags expert last year, but I tossed on a little bit of tape in the summer, took a look at Trevor Lawrence, and get into him in a second. The difference in their ability to move people on the defensive line with their offensive line this year is like night and day. I think it's like 3 yards over expectation, or at least 3 yards before, I'm sorry, 3 yards before contact this year. Last year, guys were getting hit in the backfield every snap. ETN stood no chance, probably because he's not that good, but like he's definitely not going to be that good when you have essentially what was the current Raiders offensive line in front of him.
Yeah.
And he's not Ashton Jeanty. And who is Ashton Jeanty?
And now you're. Yeah, they're getting Tutton involved more, too, because he's a guy that has much more of an explosive capability to his game. And I know it's early, but like,
you see,
I could see him stealing some of those snaps.
They also have LaQuint Allen out of Syracuse, who was a seventh round draft pick. And he's shockingly good at pass pro for a rookie. I should also note that they also have Cody Schrader on the team.
They do have Cody Schrader. He's not doing much.
No, he's not doing anything, really.
Allen's an interesting player where he's like not really a running back, but not really a wide receiver, but he's like
pretty
large and strong. Yeah, he's a strange player.
It's like an H-back. He's like a classic H-back. I really like him. And it makes you know, just fantasy football wise, it makes this backfield impossible. But, you know, if you're a defensive coordinator, you don't give a damn about fantasy football. And it becomes pretty difficult to figure out what the hell to do, because you can throw in two rookies that can actually provide. And at this juncture, to have two rookies in the backfield that provide and do kind of tough things, frankly, with Tootin kind of being this pass catching guy, kind of the speed dude, and they're a little bit shitty. And then with Allen being pass pro, catch it out of the backfield, kind of the classic third down back, plus ETN, who will throw a shoulder down. Like, I would expect that the Niners, particularly with Bosa out, are going to feel the Jaguars run game early in this one and have to establish that they can stop it.
Yeah.
Jags get into the pass game.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think that's the number one responsibility. And I do think still with Michael, it'll be interesting how they decide to operate opposite Michael. Like, is that Sam Oh, who sometimes looks good and sometimes is getting pushed around, and Kalia Davis will have some. Yeah.
What is Sam Oh to you right now?
Like, I don't
know. If you had to classify him as a run stopper or a pass rusher, like, what is he?
I honestly don't know. I wouldn't classify him as a run stopper. I would classify him as an effort end. Like, a guy.
That's an elegant way of putting it. We're going to steal that.
He's an effort defensive end who sometimes pulls like a pretty sick spin move out of his bag, like once every 10 plays, and then sometimes is completely uninvolved. He's a perfect defensive end against teams that want to screen you to death. Like, if you're against an offense that wants to dink and dunk, he's going to be great because he can pick stuff up out of the backfield. He can chase it down. He's great at that. And he's not huge, but he's got some good strength. It's a question of, like, if he gets doubled, I don't know how much I trust him to hold up, whereas Michael is just going to hold his ground. So I think they're going to go at whoever that end is. And they promoted Robert Beal to the active roster, which is to say,
I mean, I'm pretty sure Gibson is going to get called up from the practice squad as well.
Do they, like, trust Robert Beal? I'm genuinely curious, because they've always had, like, an affinity for him, and he was sort of meant to be like a rusher, but then he sort of turned into just a guy who stands there. So I wonder if he takes on like an early down role. Genuinely curious, because Bryce Huff has been good, but I don't think they want him doing that every down, especially since they need the pass rush capabilities. Yetor's not healthy enough to do it, and he's basically a pass rush specialist himself. So someone else is going to have to figure it out.
Actually, most when you think about defensive line, sort of the classic term is like you have a first and second down guy, and then you have a third down guy, particularly on the interior, right? Maybe the Niners don't even do that. Maybe they have a first down guy and then a second and a third down guy, which would be Huff, right?
Because it
obviously depends on the situation. Like, if it's, you know, second and three, then you don't bring Huff out there.
Can I throw something out there?
I would love to hear it.
You put Alfred Collins, you do some early down defensive end snaps for Alfred Collins.
Okay.
It's not absurd.
It's not absurd, but you've got the wrong guy. It's Jordan Elliott at end. And you can use him as a first down defensive end, because they tried that with a five-man front. And I'm fascinated to see the schematics of this Niners defense. We've talked about it already this week. But you put Elliott at end. Now there's a role for Elliott as opposed to just a guy who comes in. And in theory, there's a guy who is getting a little bit more money than everyone else. He should have a more defined role than just another dude. Put Elliott at end on first down. Your tackles are, who would be the tackles in this case? Like, what's your ideal first down defensive line for the Niners' first snap of this game?
It's still Kalia Davis, even though he's like incredibly hit or miss. And I think it's still Jordan Elliott. But
if I'm putting Elliott at end, would it be Collins then?
I would prefer Collins at end because of the length and the ability to like hold up and disengage, and the way he can, even if he's like not necessarily winning a rep, lunge and make a tackle, and at least with his size and just pure wingspan, disrupt a little bit and slow things down. Again, this is the problem with Nick Bosa being out.
Nevin 1221 with a great one. You're both wrong. Put Farrell at DE. He's blown up more run plays than anyone in the league. My initial thought was, oh, they haven't gotten Clee Farrell yet. And then I remembered he's talking about Luke
Farrell. And Joseph, we'll get to you once we switch to the offense.
Absolutely. And so listen, that's galaxy brain. I would imagine it's going to be Sammo and Mykel on the edge on first down with Collins and probably Elliott or Davis. Or
I think it's going to be, they're going to stick with Elliott and Davis early. And then
there's a lot of rotation there. So like, I don't really give a damn who starts, but I would imagine that Sammo's there on first down. And it wouldn't shock me if they were using Huff on second down, where obviously it's both options probably available depending on down and distance, but particularly on third down with Mykel and Yetur sliding inside and maybe Sammo being on that strong side defensive end.
I think what's going to be really interesting what's going to be really interesting is the Jags get the ball out pretty quick.
Yes.
I think there was a lot. There was a lot they left on the table. Even with Parker Washington taking over from De'Ami Brown, he looked fine. But then, like, they have a ton of drops. They have a ton of penalties.
They have more illegal shift penalties than like the rest of the NFL combined right now, which makes sense. They're going from an offense that was high school level to now like a legitimately high-end NFL offense, but these guys don't know the plays, and Travis Hunter doesn't have time to learn the plays.
And Travis Hunter's playing outside corner, and they're putting him in motion. Leon Cohen said this week, like, yeah, we're going to simplify it. We're going to keep him at F, which is slot receiver, basically, but a lot of motion. And I know it's early, but I do think they deserve some criticism for like not just getting more screens to Hunter, getting him involved in some easy ways where, you know, he's doing a lot of very, very tricky motion.
Totally.
That has to be timed up, and clearly doesn't even know the plays when he's not motioning, which of course he doesn't. He's playing two full positions as a rookie. It's hard enough to learn one.
I mean, I do think that they thought he would be further along on the offensive side, but I'm with you. Watching them, the offense is so reminiscent of a Sean McVay Rams attack, which is unsurprising given that Leon Cohen at least has...
They have Shane Waldron, which is a little ugh.
I don't mind. I really don't mind the scheme of their offense right now. And Shane Waldron's,
I like the scheme, but there's just an ick, generalized vibe ick factor with Shane Waldron involved in anything.
I get that. It's not full Todd Downing, but it's up there. And then but like watching Hunter, and I tried not to focus on him. Tried to focus on kind of the holistic scheme, but they're doing a lot of stuff with Hunter that is very Puka, like a lot of insert block break off, like. By moving him around, they're kind of putting him in a Puka Nacua role. And it's like, dude, he is not Puka Nacua. Like, I know that you thought, oh, well, Puka did it as a rookie. He's the exception to the rule, man. He was a fifth rounder who wants, you know, he's like the George Kittle of wide receivers. He wants to be in the action. He wants to, you know, get his face bashed in. Like, I don't think you can do it. And there was a couple of plays that I saw where they tried to get cute with Hunter and do things like, hey, you're going to pretend to block and then break out. And then he's just in the wrong spot. And it's, listen, we don't know the actual play call, but it's clear he's in the wrong spot. Yeah.
You know, like, keep it simple for him. I will say, and I said this almost jokingly, just gut feel wise, I do think this is the game Brian Thomas Jr. breaks out a little bit. There were at least a couple plays last week where one was called back for a hold. Or another offensive, like a shift penalty. And then there was like another one that got broken up. And again, like we were sort of debating whether or not Trevor sees it. I think sometimes he does see it. There are other times where like there was a whole shot touchdown that was, he stared right at Brian Thomas Jr. There's a corner squatting. Trevor, out of anyone, has the arm to thread that in there. And it wasn't that tight of a window. No, he had him.
I know exactly.
Looked right at him as his first read. I think it was an alert, like, check it. And it was there, and he just didn't throw it, and then he took a sack. And so with him, I think that's the limiting factor with the Jaguars. I think it's a young team. They're going to have penalties. Travis Hunter's going to have some issues early. That stuff will eventually, theoretically, get ironed out over the course of a year or get better. And so you have the weaponry. Like, Brenton Strange is sick. Parker Washington is like your third wide receiver's great.
You have a serviceable offensive line.
You have a serviceable, really just a solid, not terrible, not great offensive line. Dead in the middle.
Not going to win you a game, not going to lose you a game. Better in the run than the pass. Like, this is a Niners offensive line without Trent Williams, right?
Right. And so I think, like, when I see that where it's like very obvious that throw is there, and then I see Trevor turn it down and then take a sack, I go, What are you looking for? Like, do you know what you're looking for? And I'm not convinced he does. And until he does, like, the ceiling for this team is just going to be, I don't know what it is. I mean, it's a very high ceiling. It's just, I have trouble seeing them reaching it until he really, really grasps the scheme, which is not something he's shown in his career so far that he's gotten it.
I think that there's just an inherent level of aggression with Trevor that doesn't lend itself to the full progressions that Liam Cohen wants. And we'll find out when they have these windows that are going to be there with this Niners secondary. And I do want you to get into kind of what's going on there. But I think he sees it. I think that he just chooses to do the hardest thing. And because he has so much confidence, it's almost like an inverse Kyler, to where he's like, I'm going to rip this thing. I got it. Except his footwork. And I spent about 2 hours on this yesterday watching. I'm trying to figure out what's wrong. And I don't think that he has like a loopy, elongated motion, though it's longer than most, right? It doesn't exactly fire. I think that it's his feet. Like, I don't think his feet ever get properly set. They're kind of all over the place. And he doesn't have the kind of arm talent to overcome that. Like, he needs to be in balance, and he's always trying to rip it, and it's always a beat late. It's just always a beat late.
So, like, the thing, Brock, and I think what people underestimated, because it's also Iowa State and that team looked iffy, because Brock doesn't have great arm talent, he has to throw with elite anticipation, had to develop that as a skill to be a good quarterback,
right?
Let alone a great one. Trevor has always been an elite talent in terms of passing, throwing.
Five-star recruit, played at Clemson.
Right. Is like a blue-chip athletic quarterback prospect. Mm-hmm. And I think because of that, the anticipation was like, oh, I can throw it late because I can get it in there. Yeah, and
that's right.
There was one where it was a breakup in the end zone, and I sent that to you too, where he had Brian Thomas where he could have ripped it. But instead of like seeing that window open being in motion, he's winding up as that window's closing. Yeah. And I just think I disagree with you and think he doesn't see it as clearly. Sometimes I think he is like, all right, I know on this play, I'm going here, what I'm looking for. And when it's like two reads, just one side of the field, okay.
Right.
But when it's like alert and then come back, I think he goes, I don't know what I'm looking for. I'm coming back over here. And I think he's just in too many places mentally. And because he hasn't developed that like need to throw with anticipation, he throws stuff late and sometimes he sort of forgets.
So I can't disagree with that. When we say see it, I mean, obviously there are differentiations to this. We don't need to go any further. I do think that. And it was to the point where I was wondering, this is a downside of the All 22 that we have access to. And I did send out some text, but didn't get anything back. I was wondering what the play clock situation was on a lot of these checks. Because if he can't see it, they do a really good job of checking out of plays at the line of scrimmage.
Yeah, I agree.
And I was thinking, is this before 15 seconds on the play clock, in which Liam Cohen is telling him to check from the sideline, a la Sean McVay and Jared Goff. But after 15 seconds on the play clock is done, the headset cuts off. So I'm going to keep an eye on that. If Lawrence
They have checked out of that stuff. And there was one play at the end where they got it to Thomas and they checked into a full slide. Nate Tice called that out. And it was great. And, it was a crucial play.
Not just Lawrence checking, and you have a can play, right? Like, you know what the second play is, and you can tell all the players on the field are tapping their helmet to, you know, acknowledge, hey, I know that this is a can play, all that, which is a little collegiate, but whatever. And then, but like the communication between him and his center, sorry, I forgot the name, Robert Hainsley, thank you.
Not a huge fan of his game, but.
No, but I think that we're kind of in the Jake Brendel model of like, this guy clearly understands what's happening in front of him, and that's more important than his ability to block.
It's like a catcher who can frame really well, which doesn't matter anymore, but
Bye, Patrick Bailey. meanwhile, there's another catcher out here just knocking out 60 home runs with his big ass. So, you know, it's beautiful, cool that you have a 602 OPS. You'll be fine next year, regardless. So it makes me wonder, like, oh, he can't see it. It does feel like we can agree on this. The game, or at least defenses, are moving just a beat too fast for him, whether it's his fault or whether it's just defenses are faster now. He is not anticipating. He's not out ahead. When that window opens, it's not right there. It's the window opens. He thinks about it and then throws. And that is the difference between throwing 50% completion in the NFL, because you do have all of that talent, or then, you know, being Trevor Lawrence, where I'm talking about, we got to trade you and this is all gone to hell. Now, he's going to be going up against what we know. You know, we know about the defensive line. We know what it means without Bosa. We'll find out kind of how that manifests. We know they have great linebackers, but the Niners' secondary was not ideal. Let's put it that way. Not playing at the highest level against Arizona. When you know, and it was kind of hard to figure out for a minute. Like, what did you see when you gave it another look and another look and another look against Arizona?
Yeah. So it's like, it's interesting because you're like, there's so many. It's funny because, like, some of the people that put out stats, they only show like cover one, cover two, cover four, cover six, and then you're like, or cover three, cover six.
Yeah.
And you're like,
we've shown the charts before.
But this is cover seven. Like, this, right. This is not being accounted for. A lot of teams are doing a lot of split field. You've got like a triangle to one side, and then the other two guys on the other side sorted out. Mm-hmm. And it's really tricky to identify. And a lot of man matching stuff where, depending on the route of like the one versus the two wide receiver, somebody takes him and it turns into man, and you have to carry that route across the field, like
Saban stuff.
Right. And so, again, as someone who's like not incredibly well versed in some of these like really complex coverages, it's tough to like identify, okay, what's going on here? And I think the 49ers secondary is having a little bit of time communicating that, because sometimes you're seeing like Marquise Siegel or Jason Pinnock go push, and it's not being communicated to the other side of the field, or they're not picking up on it. And you can go, all right, Renardo Green's having a hard time, but also is Diamador Lenore just not catching that either? And again, I don't necessarily know the answer to this, but there's a lot of exploitable space behind the linebackers. The Cardinals left three or four huge chunk plays out there.
Well, all you need to remember is that drop from Harrison, right? Like, yes. How much space did he have around him? There was nobody within 10 yards.
Acres. And then there's just like in the red zone, like Amari DiMercato should have had a touchdown because Upton Stout, everybody else was either playing cover six or cover four. Tough to tell in the red zone.
Totally.
But everyone else was playing a clear zone coverage, and then Upton Stout's chasing Marvin Harrison and man across the field. And you look at the replay, and literally Fred Warner and D Winters have their hands up and they're like, what are you doing?
Yes.
So I think there are going to be some times where they get gashed in this game. And I think Brian Thomas will be the beneficiary of that. PJ Washington, maybe too. We'll see. But I think there's going to be some plays out there for the Jaguars, which is why it's so hard for me to sort of calculate, because they're getting rid of the ball relatively quickly. And I don't know how the Niners are going to be at developing pressure. It's going to be a lot on Bryce Huff. Mm. It's going to be a lot on Saleh to make things look tricky. And I do think there's an element of just confusing Trevor, where you might run the same coverage, but just from different looks.
Yeah.
And just see if Trevor can figure it out.
I think if you do what you did last week, and it's all pretty straightforward, not a lot of, you know, mug blitzes or not a lot of corner blitzes, nothing like they were doing against Seattle or even against New Orleans. If you do that, you will lose, because that kind of space for receivers on those over routes or those deep digs is just, it's going to be death. You're not getting there fast enough to cover it up, which is, you know, Kyler, listen, a lot of the times Kyler was making more time in the pocket. That's the challenge of it. Now, he wasn't necessarily running all that well, but he made more time in the pocket, and you didn't have Bosa, but say for 14 snaps. So part of me is like, if you're going to get gashed by just playing it straight up, which whatever straight up is for Robert Saleh anymore, he turned it into a cover seven team last week with a star in Jair Brown, or, you know, using Upton Stout as a de facto Sam linebacker. So standard is not exactly normal practice here. But if that's what's going to happen, I'm with you. Like, go full Flores, get crazy. And the advantage that you have is that you know you have a quarterback who has not in the past, though maybe this is the game where it shows, displayed the understanding that anticipation and timing is the most important thing that you can have as a quarterback. Yeah. And I would try to take advantage of that, which means I think there's a lot of boom bust in this. But I'll bet against Lawrence in terms of being able to see it, being able to rip it the second something comes open, being able to rip it before something comes open because he knows it will be open. I think that if a guy like Brock Purdy, who has so many problems against those chaos defenses, who is all anticipation and all understanding.
Yeah, and coming off an injury where there's like a little bit of eagerness, right?
Well, I'm just saying, like, if Brock has problems against that, then Trevor Lawrence is going to have problems against that. So I would go that route. And if he beats you, he'll beat you big. And you just have to tip your hat and say that was our best way of going about it.
And last thing, Rishi mentions it, top receiver for the Jags. This game is going to be their tight end. Brenton Strange was a guy I loved in the year the 49ers drafted Cam Latu.
Yeah.
He went in the second round, but I was a huge fan of him out of Penn State. Yeah. Thought he was going to be sick, and now he's really coming into his own. He's a tough cover, and while like he didn't profile as like a great blocking tight end, he's been physical enough, I think, and he's just such a great check down. You can run like a tight end little angle, like chip and release screen with him that's like really dangerous. You know, I think honestly the Jags can probably do more of that stuff. But like he's a problem too.
I mean, he's got some real Tyler Higbee in him. If you get him on the flat, he can get you some yak. He's not an over the middle guy, but he's a really good, like, you can just line him up as a receiver. You can just go full Mike Gesicki with him, line him up as a big slot receiver, and he's going to get you some yards. I think that's a great call that Brenton Strange is going to be a problem. And that's not to take away from the Niners linebackers or even, you know, the players they have in their secondary. But when you're dealing with an offense that, no, has not manifested anything close to what it could be, but has the kind of talent that the Jaguars have, at least at skill positions, with Thomas, Parker Washington's a hell of a receiver, then Strange, and then anybody that you want to throw out of the backfield, it's a real issue. It's a real issue that they're going to have to account for. And I would just say probably the best way of going about it, I'm interested if Robert agrees with this, and we'll find out Sunday, is to muddy the waters, get it as muddy as possible and just go Flores.
It doesn't matter if it works, but it'll confuse you.
Yeah, we're going to absolutely ruin your day. Good luck to you. You can beat us. There's spots. You can beat us. If you're good enough,
we'll
beat
ourselves.
Absolutely. No question. I mean, I do. This is true. We could have called it Bandit. We could have called it Jackal. We could have called it so many other things. It's Big Nickel. The Niners like to call it Big Nickel. It's really more of a third safety, Sam linebacker hybrid. It's a position that Brian Urlacher played in college. It's a position that Fred Warner played in college. It's a position that's fundamental to most collegiate defenses now. Sort of that third safety, a true box safety that is effectively also a Sam linebacker. So you have some heft against it. But yes, most teams call it the star. And that's where Jair Brown is playing. And you know what? That he loved it. He loved it when they first brought that up in the meeting. Like, Jair, you're going to be the star. And he goes, I already know.
I am the star. Should we switch sides of the ball here?
Yeah, special teams. No, I'm kidding.
Special teams. We gave Brant Boyer a lot of deference because we liked the way he's coaching. But, like, they're still dog shit. I mean it. Their kickoff coverage is, like, bottom in the league.
Yeah.
The returning's terrible, and part of that's just personnel. Like, you can't really teach Isaac Arendo to, like, have a feel for the game if he doesn't have it.
No.
So
yeah, that's a guy who doesn't see it.
Yes.
Trevor Lawrence, we can debate. I know that Isaac Arendo does not see it, nor does he feel it. He's Helen Keller out there. He's got none of the senses going.
It's tough.
So I guess Helen Keller had feel. That's how she learned how to speak and read and be a mind. No,
keep talking.
No, it's going great. It's going great. The estate of Helen Keller is coming for this show next. Okay. Niners on offense. Who's playing this week, Jake?
So, but listen, maybe it's just me having my head in the sand and just grinding tape, but like DeMarcus Robinson's back this week.
That's fun.
That's crazy.
He's a good player. He's a good player.
Yeah. DeMarcus Robinson's out there. I don't, Who else is back? It seems like Purdy's playing, right?
I would guess that Purdy's playing. John Lynch went on KNBR this morning and said he looked great in practice. There is some level of skepticism and smokescreen awareness that we have to be cognizant of, but I don't get the sense that Mac is playing because of the PCL injury. And Adrian Martinez apparently took some first team reps yesterday because both quarterbacks starting, both guys who have started a game this year were limited. That's probably not ideal and is the end of the segment. If it
is, wasn't he the Adrian MVP Martinez. Of, what was it? What league would I never? I don't know what
it'd be the other UFL league. At this point. Yeah. The Birmingham Stallions.
Yeah, Birmingham Stallions sounds Thank right. You. Or the Thank or you. The Barons or something.
No, it's Birmingham Barons or the Double A baseball team. Yeah.
Yeah, sorry.
Go Barons, White Sox affiliate. Thank you. Probably the best team in the White Sox thing. Can we quickly before we get into the rest of who's in, who's out? John Lynch did mention in the Goat Lord. Shout out to the Goat Lord. All hail the Goat Lord.
All hail. Yeah.
Did mention on KBR this morning that Ayuk is, quote, not close, which is kind of the first public acknowledgement of something that we've all presumed and then sort of talked ourselves out of with wishful thinking, including us. I mean, it's right. Ironic. I was doing some wishful thinking. But the knee exploded. So, we talk about Nick Bosa being back for week one next year because it's just an ACL. It was like MCL, PCL, ZCL, all meniscus, all of the CLs. And that is probably the stuff that he's still working through because you had to go full Terminator knee on this thing and rebuild it bionically. So not close indicates that we're not even entering in a conversation until
December.
I would say November. I've seen him run. Like he's physically running. So like
I think it's a month before it's even a conversation.
I think that's right. And sorry, my daughter stole the schedule. Thanks, Lottie. Cool of you. She just needed to note that the Chargers were on there.
Dieter somehow has turned his daughter into a Chargers fan. So that's
I didn't do anything, awesome. Jake. Okay, so here's what happens. I found
I'm not joking. It's not even a bit.
It's 100% a thing, which by the way, she's going to end up winning. When you go on a walk with the dog, Alameda has this kind of cool unspoken thing where people just put their stuff they don't want anymore out on the street, right? And I know most towns do that, but like it's usually like okay stuff. Like there's no need for offer up in Alameda,
right?
It's just like put it in a box out on the street, write free on it, and you get a lot of good baby stuff. You wash it, you wipe it down with some alcohol and stuff. So there was a Chargers backpack that was like perfectly sized for a 1-year-old on the street. And I go, oh, she's actually been asking for a backpack. I don't want to go to Target and buy some $40 backpack. Here's the backpack. And it says Chargers on it, whatever. Like, I don't care. It's cool colors, cool logo. Put it in the washing machine, comes out looking great. Chargers backpack, here we go. That was a mistake. Because now it's all Chargers all the time, and she likes watching football with daddy, but now she has a vested interest in, like, when do the Chargers play? So every Monday I have to watch Chargers tape with Lottie, which is not
going to awesome.
Be her future development, but she does know how to work the PlayStation controller for NFL Pro.
I love that.
It's to the point where last night I might have gotten her for her birthday a yellow, her favorite color, Justin Herbert Chargers jersey.
That's fucking sick.
It's going to be kind of cool. It's going to be kind of cool. Also, last night, she has her Chargers football in bed, and I'm like, hey, and like, how you doing? She goes, go Chargers. And I said, you know that I was raised a Kansas City Chiefs fan, right? And she goes, go Chargers. So now she's also, I have no idea, figured out.
She's just like taking on the persona of Jim Harbaugh, just like playing mind games with you. She's going to start wearing caps.
Smacking the shoulders of her sister. So I have a Chargers fan in the house, which might prove really useful if they do, in fact, make the Super Bowl in Santa Clara this year and might make the playoffs interesting, depending on how this Niner season goes. So. Lottie needs to be updated on the Chargers at all times. Regardless, what was the original point?
I wanted to get back to, by the way, Joseph, sorry, long overdue. Thank you. Yeah. Niners have top five worst offense in the league. I disagree. They're currently the best passing offense in the league, despite Mac Jones
to be fair, in terms a little of yardage. Because they can't run the ball, so you have to throw. But, like, correct. Have you watched the Houston Texans? Like, dude, have you watched the Browns?
It's something where I'm like, whatever criticism people have of CJ Stroud, I can't even really criticize him because, I mean, I can, but like, he's fighting for his life every single snap.
I'm gonna say it one more time. We're gonna leave it as it is. A good 10, maybe even 15 teams in the NFL are just winging it on the offensive line. So we think about, this is a great point by Matt Harmon I heard the other day. He's like, man, the Raiders offensive line is totally non-functional. And then you look at who their offensive line coach, it's one of Pete Carroll's two sons. And it's like, how are you? He might be a good coach, right. But like, it's not a stretch to figure out how he got that job. And so do you expect him to get the job done? Maybe it's a reverse Brian Callahan situation. By the way, they got to get rid of younger Callahan in Tennessee. It's awful. I'm eating it every day.
Yeah, you're like, no, it's changed. And I was like, you hated him so much.
He's the worst coach in the league. We don't need to get into the details. We'll do like an NFL show at some point, like a wide ranging one. Regardless, the Niners have a very good offensive line. And when you think about Houston, it's like, oh, our offensive line was absolute dog shit last year. How do we fix this? Let's go get everyone else's scraps. It was basically the streets of Alameda. A bunch of people put offensive linemen in a box that said free, and the Texans are like, that will do it. That will fix it.
They traded Laremy Tunsil to the Commanders.
Well, heaven forbid they pay their one good offensive lineman. They blamed him for the problems and then put Ursary, who I was not a big fan of, coming out of Minnesota. There was an argument to be made, certainly. But
like, yeah, I'm still not sure he's even a tackle, but
he's too big to play guard. So like, right. Now we're in that situation. They just mess like
Matt Pryor type.
The Niners offense, if you're going to argue that it's a bottom five in the league, at least be honest about what is holding it back. They had a backup quarterback for two of their games. They've had just depth issues at wide receiver, right? You don't know if Juwan Jennings is in or out and what he can do for you. You have one running back who can really do much of anything. You've gone up against three defenses that at least schematically really should give you challenges if you want to run your basic stuff, which every team wants to do in the early portion of a season, particularly one that didn't really practice at all in training camp. Like this Niners offense, much like this Jags offense, has so much room to go. Having Purdy back, I imagine we start to see that manifesting a little bit. But when you watch the Jags defense, what do you think the Niners can get on them? What do you think that the Niners will be slowed down by?
It's a tough defense, dude. It's a tough defense. They've been good in both facets. It's like 82, 83 rush yards per game, sixth best. And they never stack the box. They have the lowest stack box percentage in the league. So what that allows them to do is just play like, you know, six, occasionally seven up front, but really like they're playing coverage and their corners are pretty decent.
Yeah.
They're not terrible. It's like Jordan Lewis and Tyson Campbell and Travis Hunter. And then I don't know who the hell Wingard is, their other safety. But Eric Murray played for the Texans last year. I kind of liked him. I thought he could have been a veteran safety pickup for the Niners.
He was a good player.
I think he got himself ejected for trying to murder Nico Collins, but like he's a pretty good player. And because they have just like beef up front, it's, you know, they got Hines Allen. They've got, I almost called
Trayvon Walker.
Yeah, Trayvon Walker, who like people rightfully sort of ragged on, but then has turned himself into a 10-a-sack sort of guy.
He's a good player. He'll never be one overall, kind of like Lawrence, like a good player. Probably not worth that draft capital in retrospect, but you want him on your team.
And then Davon Hamilton's just like a big dude who's like tough to get anything against. Then Eric Armstead has a little bit of juice left. He's not what he was, but like he's still got something left there. And so that's a group that up front it's just a lot of physicality to deal with. And then behind them, their linebackers are Lloyd, who's very athletic, Aluakon, who's like pretty underrated and has just like played for the Jags his whole career. He's kind of hit or miss, but he can fly to the ball.
He's a great downhill tackler.
Yes.
You want him in space, though. He's
and then like, there's Dennis Gardick, who's like sort of a...
Love Dennis Gardick.
A Swiss Army knife piece who's like pretty fun to have. It's just like they've got a base level of like pretty good on that defense. And they're also doing a lot of like cover seven, a lot of man match stuff.
Right.
So, I think the passing offense is still going to get their own. I do think this is a game Purdy comes back and throws a pick. I think...
Okay.
Also, the Jags have had like 10 interceptions this year. They've just created some trouble. They've created pressure up front, and
they've played really bad offenses. And I think somebody made
that point. Correct. Like,
it is.
But that's all to say, like,
yeah,
I don't know how this game goes, man.
I think I know on a macro sense how. I think it's a shootout. I think that it's
my gut is that it's faster paced than slower paced, and it goes that way.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a lot of three and outs and a lot of like broken play touchdowns.
Yep.
And that boom or bust back and forth, I do think lends itself to the Niners, frankly, because it'll probably come down to something late. And I trust Brock Purdy in that. I mean, maybe this is overly simplistic, but maybe that's what we need to start doing here, because
I trust Purdy
more than Lawrence.
I trust the coaching of the Niners significantly more than the Jags, even though that's to say I kind of like what Campanile, their defensive coordinator, is doing.
Yeah, I think they're like well coached.
I like what Cohen's trying to build, but again, the key is trying to build, right? This is year one of a build, and I just think the Niners coaching staff is sharp, and they still, even without Bosa, they still have some pieces that have been around and understand how this thing is supposed to go. And I would lean, in a game that gets weird and wonky, I'd still lean the Niners because they've been winning those types of games.
Yes. You know, last year, it's not a one-for-one comparison because it's totally different players and totally different circumstance. But like Liam Cohen drew some pretty cool stuff up against the Niners defense last year. And it's a very different defense, right? With all these rookies and Bob Saleh back and all that. But like, that was a tough game. And the Niners went into that game in Tampa last year as 6-point favorites. And I think actually it got up to like 6.5, 7. And that game came down to, you know, Jake Moody missing 3 field goals and then making one. So I am probably sealing the Niners' fate by saying that I would bet on the Niners to win with 2 teams in the 30s in this game. I would bet on them winning like 33-30.
I bet there's like 3 or 4 turnovers in this game.
Yeah. Yeah, I think there's going to be a lot of head scratching in this game. But also total flip side where you're like, wow, incredible. It's just too much boom or bust. If Purdy looks like Purdy has looked in the past, they got it. If Purdy's anything less, right, if he looks tentative as a runner, then we're in very even Stevens territory.
Totally. And the other component, too, that I didn't even mention with Robinson is if he and Jennings go this week, there's a level of physicality that they'll add to the run game that could help out quite a bit on the edge.
Totally.
Where instead of maybe having 2 tight ends with Tonjes, where you're like, that's not working, and Bourne, who's been he's still relearning the offense, and physically he's not like dominating people on the edge. He's an above average blocker, but he hasn't been consistent. There's a level of physicality there that I think could help in the run game and spring a couple chunk plays, and maybe you get a reverse run for Pearson.
That's a good idea.
Because that one that looked like dog shit, what was it, 2 weeks ago?
Yep.
It was honestly not too far away from being like a near touchdown. I mean,
That's the Farrell missing the initial block and then Trent coming back because he didn't know.
Trent and Juice taking the same guy. Yeah.
Yeah. I will. I'll say this. You know, you mentioned that the Jags don't stack the box. I think this is a big Christian McCaffrey on the ground game. I think that this is the game where everyone comes in the backside and be like, we were never worried about the Niners run offense, which of course is not true. That's all I've heard from folks outside. And I don't think that they're wrong in questioning what's going on there. I think that the Niners are going to be able to run the ball. Frankly, I think that the Jaguars are going to be able to run the ball. and the Niners having one running back versus the Jaguars having two guys that they can really trust to get chunk plays is going to be interesting. Now you're shaking your head a little bit. What do you?
I don't know. I mean, the Niners have. I think the run game has been pretty decent on defense. Now Bosa is like taking up a lot of that on the edge, and so that's a major component. But and maybe some of that relies on Stout, but I'm not that concerned about the, I mean, and maybe it's like a, you know, 6 yard to carry, 6 yard to carry approach. In that, that's a way I could see the Jags getting them. I don't know about huge explosive plays killing them in the run game. I think that there's a level of force they're bringing at the point of attack that's been decent.
Yeah. I agree with that. I just think that they're going to be able to effectively run the ball in this game, which is not something that a lot of other teams could say. I think it will be probably most similar to the Seattle game, but probably a little bit better, because I do think that, you know, if Saleh is going to be muddying the waters and doing this, which is our suggestion, there's no insight. That's just a guess. Gabe. if that happens, I think that he's going to have to lean towards the secondary more. I think he's going to have to protect more in the backfield as opposed to maybe putting more guys up front. And it's just going to be, it's just going to be really tricky. I just don't know where this defense is, where their strengths are right now.
We could see a coverage bust where it's Travis Hunter running the wrong route and it breaks the Niners rules by accident. Can I make that as a prediction?
That's a great call.
Travis Hunter gets like a 70 yard touchdown because he runs the wrong route and nobody passes it off.
I do think that we should just like be very clear about what we're talking about when we say that Travis Hunter doesn't know the plays. Like, it's not
a
small thing. And we're not just picking on Travis Hunter. Like, it is, you watch the play from that high camera angle and you go, oh, that guy doesn't know what the play is because he just ran into his own teammate, or he's looking around and he doesn't seem to know what's happening.
And he's getting illegal motions and
right. And then you zoom in and you're like, 12? Oh, and it's always 12. I mean, sometimes it's a 7, but it's most of the time.
Or De'Ami Brown, who's injured. Also, you know who also doesn't know the play? The camera operator for the Jags, who's fucking lost out there. What's going on, man? What are you looking at? He's looking at the cheerleaders on the sideline. He's zooming into a sound guy. Yeah. Every play, it's like the camera's like, oh, shit, there's a game.
Oh,
what
fuck, are we doing? They're playing. I mean, it's like me.
Maybe it's the editor halftime, and that's just what each play normally looks like. But
no, there's a lot. I mean, there's a longer show about all 22 quirks, like the Bears angle and the Jag. I mean, I've seen this before with the Jags. There's one other team that does it. The Rams guy. The Rams guy just has some real problems, but the Chargers don't have the same problem at home, which is interesting. So
yeah.
Just something to keep an eye on when we're watching this tape back. I guess, and I'll say this, whoever is running these end zone and sideline cameras for the Niners, all over it. They're nailing it. Great job. No nonsense, no fluff. Maybe it is the editor, but yeah, I mean, the amount of plays when you're watching it from what I will always call Alltel Stadium in Jacksonville what the hell is the name of the stadium even now?
I couldn't tell you.
Florida Bank or some nonsense. It's always just pan up. He's just looking at something on the side, pan up, and you get motion sickness watching it a little bit, which I guess is why Trevor Lawrence is so behind. He's every play that he watches on all 22. It's like there's a sense of panic inherent in the shot. It's bad direction.
I love it. I love that. I'm gonna go and say the Niners win 30-27.
Yeah, I mean, we're not far off. We're not far off.
It's
what's the differentiation?
This is a game that like coaches are like, it's about execution. This is a game where it's like whichever team just like fucks up less is probably going to win this.
That's probably right. You and I seek football played at the highest level. We will not be finding that.
And again, I don't even really like, I came into this, I don't really like the Jaguars, but they have a lot of things that are like you could see in like a month or two. You're like, oh, the Jaguars are kind of tricky. I just don't believe in Trevor Lawrence, and he just misses some stuff that I'm like, I can't ever fully buy into this.
But you can't also completely sell all your Trevor Lawrence stock.
We're not
at Kyler territory yet.
I was expecting him to be worse than Kyler, and no, I would rather have Lawrence than
he's like Kyler. A bizarro Kyler. Like the flats are open all the time, and he's like, fuck that, we're going deep. Like we're throwing it deep. And if he gets the big windows which could happen. We saw him last week, right? And Kyler's like, I guess I have to do this now.
But he can't see it, and then it's late, yeah.
How many of Kyler's throws on those deep digs or those over routes were him just sort of like throwing it backwards like a water balloon? It was awful. It was awful. Whereas Trevor Lawrence will step and step and step and step and step into it, and then his, you know, front foot will completely
right. You're
slide
like, can
out.
We get a 1-2-3 rip it? And he's like, 1-2 yeah. 3.5. Oh shit, I got to throw.
Yeah,
but it's also coming out quick. Very strange. Very strange quarterback.
Here's my guess on Trevor Lawrence. I would guess that he's actually not a very good golfer because he does not have solid footwork. He doesn't feel like he's strong on his feet when he throws the ball. It feels like
I was
going to
say because he gets
around.
Just distracted or something.
That also could be true, but like he needs total silence where you can't noise canceling headphones out on the course. It's you just watch his feet and it's like, why yeah. is your back foot like slipping up like you're on roller skates there? And I can't tell you why. I mean, I think it's been bad coaching up until this point, and I just don't think that the Jags are in a position with all the nonsense that they're having to install to be like, oh, also we're going to fix Trevor Lawrence's feet. But that's another aspect of like, if this doesn't work out and at the end of the season, they're like, we got to get rid of Lawrence. He goes somewhere else. Let's just play a fun, weird game. Let's just say that like he goes to the Vikings because they're like, oh, we were totally wrong about JJ. Goes to the Vikings. Kevin O'Connell will fix that in a week.
Yeah.
And then it's over because he has all the skill set to be. So I do think, situation is everything.
Like Steichen working with Danny Dimes. Come on. Sometimes it does take quarterbacks like a second or third place and a rehab stint with a coach who knows ball. Let's hit some comments before we get out of here.
I would love that.
For starting off with winner, winner, chicken Dieter. I enjoyed that. Thank you.
Please don't eat me.
There's no context, but no. I just think it was important to mention that. As Cam's dad mentioned, Hulk.
He is on the practice squad. Saw him yesterday.
He's on the practice squad.
Did not have the heart in the moment. Also didn't have the opportunity, but he was right there and he was talking to Pleasance and a couple other guys. And Fred was doing his locker's right next to Fred's. And so they're like, you need to get out of there because the media swarm is coming to talk to Fred. And so as he was going, Fred started talking, but I was going to be like, hey, have you ever played center? There are some folks in the comment section that's wondering awesome. If you can play center.
Probably could.
And he'd probably be very willing at this juncture to
he
in
looks
fact
like
do
a center.
It. Actually, I didn't get looking at him. He's V-shaped. I wouldn't call that center.
Well, he's probably got to add more in the stomach area.
Yeah, you need more of a dumper. You need to be more Cal Raleigh than Aaron Judge.
Yeah, that's fair.
That's neither here nor there.
Henry, the tricky part about this game is they play the Rams on Thursday. Yeah, I'm interested. Do they... I don't know, like, in terms of injuries, in terms of managing it, do they say, like, Juwan, wait until Thursday because we've got Bourne and Robinson coming back. Don't push it. Do they... I can't imagine them. I think they just got to sell out and go for this. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't think you can ever play the law. Kyle, by the way, is like a master of this, overthinking it and being like, oh no, we're going to play it safe. We're going to play it safe, which is a stunner when you watch how he coordinates.
I don't think there's any playing it safe this week.
No, if you go to 4-0, you can, and this is the crazy part about it. So I predicted them to go 9-8. You predicted them to go 10-7, right? Like, if they go 9-8, that means that they're playing losing football the rest of the year, which I don't think is going to happen. But like, even if you were to just say Nick Bosa's out and that kind of knocks them down to a 500 team, having three in the bag puts them in the driver's seat against this schedule, which, you know, some ups and some downs that we've already seen develop from what we expected. Like, having three in the bag is so huge. I mean, you're a third of the way to 9 wins already. And as Kyle Juszczyk aptly said, like, I have no idea what this fucking team is.
No,
he didn't
no
say
one
it that
does.
Way. That's a paraphrase. But like, with all of the growth that you could, you know, project from this defense without Brock Purdy for two games, you're effectively a third of a way to a legitimate shot at the playoffs before September's over. If you go to 4-0,
yeah,
cruise control, baby.
And then you get the mini buy that they love.
Totally, you get
after
six
that.
Games.
And you can return Mustafa after that.
Yeah.
get Kittle back soon. Like, there's
if you get to 4-0, you are in a position, if you need 10 wins to make the playoffs, you're in a position where you can go 6-7 the rest of the way. Like, that's awesome. And that's totally, I mean, it's beyond reasonable, right? So long as we maintain that idea of kind of what it is, and you would love to see them exceed it. Why wouldn't you? Why wouldn't you try to exceed it? But the ability to just play sub 500 football the rest of the way and still feel very, very confident, like 90% certainty, you're going to make the playoffs is huge. Yeah. It's unbelievable. So you can't just say, oh, we got to worry about the Rams.
Yeah, and I don't think Kyle looks at it. I think he's like, every game is crucial. Totally. Half Dead asks, what do you think of letting Purdy sit for the whole 6 weeks like people are saying? I don't know who's saying that. I think the timeline was 2 to 5 weeks. And I think that's a different conversation if Mac is fully healthy this week, whereas this is like Purdy could have maybe gone last week. Again, I don't know what his goddamn toe feels like, because that is a pretty painful injury from what I've heard. And it's like if he can't move,
right,
then it's a real problem. And then you say shut it down until another 2 weeks and we'll try and figure it out with Adrian Martinez and the ghost of Mac Jones. I don't know.
I mean, it is going to be really interesting to see somebody wearing steel-toed boots out on an NFL field. Like, I wonder how that's going to work with that 10-second split. But, like,
Didn't kickers used to kick with, like, steel shoes?
I don't think so. I think that would have been patently illegal. Maybe I made that up. Though, legitimately, maybe like a steel plate on the toe, on the tongue. Like, that would, who knows? Listen, there was a suggestion last week, and I think a fair one. I don't think they were just smoke screening, that Brock could have played last week. So it lends itself pretty easily to, you know, you don't have to suspend disbelief to believe that he's going to play this week.
I think he's back this week. I think the Rams game is just going to suck for them. I think it's
probably,
but
it might suck for the Rams too.
It sucks for everyone. It's Thursday night football. It should be illegal, and they're just creating more and more of it. Last few comments here. I have to mention this one for Mashed Eggs, just because it's the fact that Ayuk is running after his knee got turned in lasagna is somewhat encouraging. I shouldn't laugh because that's horrible, but it's a really good use of the English language.
Yeah. That knee was in the slow cooker for sure. I mean,
I think, well, it's hard. It's because people think like every knee injury is just like a torn ACL, and it really was like an explosion. Like, it couldn't have been worse.
No, it was some battlefield shit. It was.
Otis Sweatpants, just incredible name. Didn't the Jags lose to the Jake Browning Bengals? Yeah. That's the other component, is like, maybe the Jags actually just kind of suck, and have some cool pieces and are trying some things and have played some bad teams. Right.
It's a very realistic possibility, but that's not what I saw on the tape.
But what I saw is a team that has like a pretty decent defense, at least an above average defense. We'll see about the regression to the mean and all that, who's playing some decent coverages and like what they do with Travis Hunter. I think it's a team that's trying to figure out what they are, right? And there's a lot to like, and there's a lot to go, what is this? And they're like, we don't know yet. So,
yeah. I mean, and let's be clear about this. They, you know, that was because Trevor threw two interceptions. Jake Browning did throw three, one of which kind of you don't hold against him. It was a little fluky. They ran the ball for $139 on 27 carries. They had 271 yards in the air, three touchdowns. Like, the offense didn't lose them that game. They put 27 points up, and Trevor, I mean, the offense. Trevor is the offense. He threw two bad interceptions. He had a fumble in the game. It feels like that is more applicable to this upcoming game than that Texans game that we just saw, where they didn't play all that well because the Texans defense kicks ass. But neither did the Texans, because the Texans offense sucks ass. So
yeah, it's,
I would say tough. More like a 31-27, which I believe was your score prediction anyway.
Yeah. Benali, any concerns on Brock off the injury? Larry said his passes were floating in practice. One. Yeah, I definitely have concerns.
Of course.
With a toe injury and mobility, I don't make anything out of what we are allowed to see at practice, just as a rule.
Also, you know, floating.
Also, Brock, generally, his ball's a little floaty.
Okay. I'll give you that. It's not floppy, though. Are we differentiating between floaty and floppy? Let's put a little more arc on it. Let's put is that what we're saying?
Yeah. Sure. Okay. I don't know.
Because
I don't
know. There are some guys who just throw like a wobbly ass football.
Yeah, no, I think it just means air under. I don't know. Yeah. I don't make anything out of what we see at practice because it's not practice. Last one, Cam's dad. If you're Jed and somehow you beat the Rams in week 5, do you go out to the market for a defensive end? It depends. Is Mykael Williams looking like he's adding to his arsenal a little bit? Is he looking sort of competent as a pass rusher? Is Sam Oh overperforming? Is Yetur Gross-Matos coming around with some time off and can maybe give you a little bit more? Is Robert Beal a competent run defender? Like, these are all questions you have to ask before you make a trade. I would say I would bet on them not trading for anyone in the market of 6th round or higher.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Lynch did say on KNBR today that's like, we're always going to be aggressive. We have Trent Williams and Christian McCaffrey. Like, we'll make trades if they're there. You know, they didn't have to give up 1st rounders for either of those guys.
Trade Isaac Garendo, and then we got...
I am of the mindset that they will add at defensive end. I'm with you that it will be low level. Because the flip side of that argument is, you guys are 5-0. Let's just 5-0 after the Rams game, right? Well, what are you... that's just adding to what you now already believe to be a really competent operation. So it's even less incentive,
right,
via success to go and take the big swing. When you go and you get a Trent Williams, it's because it's that or you will die. If you go and you get Christian McCaffrey, it's because Debo has been found out. This offense is non-functional. We need to go get somebody who can create conflict. Like, we need that second piece along with Kittle. You can make that argument if they start to lose games. Right now, some desperation kicks in, but that would also imply that they had expectations of doing something very serious. They're not going to go in and overspend on anybody, and the marketplace for trades is 9 times out of 10 that you need to overpay. And I think most teams, particularly with the defensive end, which is a real plug-and-play situation, are going to be asking for the moon for some of these players because everyone wants one and everyone thinks that they can immediately integrate it. Whereas, like, how many teams are out here asking about oft injured at the time and probably still now Christian McCaffrey then?
Totally.
And are willing to take, you know, a couple seconds and a third.
I think it's something where it's like, remember the Charles Omenihu trade?
Yeah.
Right. That was like a guy who, if you went in and you looked at the pass rush data, was actually like winning a shocking amount of the time. You look for a guy like that on a team that's doing mediocre, right? You look for like a guy that's in the rotation who's playing like kind of how Bryce Huff started his career, where he was playing like rotational snaps, but is like winning at like a pretty high rate, you know, on a team that's like doing meh.
I would make the argument that the Bryce Huff model is exactly what you're looking to repeat from this past offseason. A guy who clearly has some juice, but is in the wrong scheme and fits your scheme better. And you like him enough to think, hey, this is something. Somebody who is in a situation that is not working for him. A name that immediately comes to mind, by the way, and this will not make people happy, and I don't think would be a good trade for what it's worth, is Chase Young with the Saints. Chase Young's on the Saints. They have no use for him.
Right.
They run a 3-man front with 2 stand-up linebackers on either side, and he's not Josh Sweat. He's a actual hand in the ground defensive end. He's also a loafing defensive end, which means that he's never coming back. But like, that is the kind of player that you're looking for. Somebody who you're like, oh, that guy should be playing at least some snaps. You look and you see that they're playing few, if any, and you go, oh, let's bring that guy in because you can get him for nothing. They're putting him in the box on the street in Alameda, saying free. And maybe that really works for you. And one man's trash is another man's treasure. That would be the guys that I would imagine they're looking for.
Like a guy like Kalaivon Chaisson, who is like...
can you say one more time?
Kalaivon Chaisson, who is an LSU edge rusher who I kind of liked, but is kind of on the smaller side, who is with the Patriots and has been like pretty good-ish. Like where he's like on a 1-year, $5 million deal and you go, well, Would the Patriots just let him go and try and get the comp pick? Are they a team that plays that game? Some teams, that's the other thing. You got to know the research on teams that actually don't play the comp pick game. Because some teams don't do it at all because they're idiots. And they just literally don't know. No. I mean, like, if you're not
they
thinking
don't think
about
these
that,
things through. Yeah, they don't. They go, find out at the end what they got as opposed to gaming it out.
Or they say, let's save a little cash by getting rid of this guy.
Brian Burns is actually kind of the last guy I would expect them to go get on the basis of he costs money, right? So somewhat like Trey Hendrickson, they cost money even for just the rest of the year. And then you have to kind of figure out what to do with their contract after that. And he's available for a reason. And I don't even think he's available for what it's worth, but like he's not in the sweet spot of cheap and misused. Because he's used and he's expensive, and they're getting and they would get rid of him in the same way that, let's just be honest about this, the same way that Washington got rid of Brian Robinson. And you think you're getting one over because it's like, oh, they're giving up a first round. They see him every day. And maybe there's a situation where, again, it would work better in your system than ours. But like defensive ends outside of the teams that are running a 3-4 and have a bunch of 4-3 defensive ends because they've done a recent coaching change. Yep. Like that, Brian Burns is a plug and play. They do a 4-man front. They do a wide nine a lot of times with the Giants. Like, it makes all the sense in the world. If they're giving him up to the San Francisco 49ers, a team that's in their conference with the money that he caught, like, I don't think the Niners would do it because of the money. And I don't think that the Giants would do it because it's like, unless he's really broken.
Yeah. Otis Sweatpants, have you seen Malik Collins is killing in Cleveland? I have seen that. Dieter, you have a response? Because I always defended Malik Collins and said they were asking him to do too much, and he's a guy who actually can do both things, but if you ask him to do it snap in and snap out, it's a tough assignment. I thought he had some really good flashes and some ugly plays. Dieter had refused
I was
to hear
done with
it.
I'll say this. I think Jim Schwartz is a better coordinator than damn near anybody on the defensive side.
I think that's fair. And as Kyle can attest to, because I don't think he's ever beat Jim Schwartz.
And listen, I feel like a big idiot, which is a constant occurrence, but like, because I am big and also an idiot. But it is, you know, that Packers-Browns game where they just played press man-to-man on the outside and they got after it with four. And it's like, oh, man. So funny that a guy who runs the Shanahan outside zone scheme had a hard time against Jim Schwartz. Exactly. You know, I talk all the time about like, oh, this scheme really sets it up. You know who really has a good scheme against outside zone? Jim fucking Schwartz. He's got it nailed. He's the best at this. Everyone should copy that. And I do believe that there's a new nickname for the Jim Schwartz scheme that you came up with last night.
Oh, what did I say? God, it was meat awful. Like meat and meat up front and heat in the back. Hated it. Which brings us to our last point. I think we need 10 minutes on floaty versus floppy. So we'll save that for another time. I think that's a good point to end it.
Hopefully you enjoyed this show. If you did, please subscribe. Tell your friends to subscribe. And, at a certain point, we like where we're at, but we'd like to go higher. And we'd love to. You need to subscribe to Jake's Substack because he has so many grades. He's replacing PFF for you folks.
The charts. I spent so much time making charts. My girlfriend is concerned. She's like, are you going to sleep? And I'm just on a German chart-making website. So try it again. You can try it for free and see if you like it. But it's pretty good. And we got the first season-long grades of the season. I've updated it. So
those are the important ones. At Dieter on the machine, at Hutch Diesel on the machine, and we'll talk to you Sunday after the game. Jake in the house Sunday after the game.
I will be there. So. Dieter and I will be post-game live. From Levi's Stadium?
Wow. Wow. NBCSN could never. NBC Sports Bay Area could never possibly match the production values that Dieter and Hutch will have on Sunday
either,
from
folks.
Some luxury box at Levi's Stadium. Talk to y'all then.